Hello, hello.
Hey, what are you? How are you doing, Scotty?
Good, man. How are you doing?
Oh, good. We have a guest that's very hard to define. An artist, a world builder, a technologist. Pick your poison. Medarik, how you doing, sir?
How you doing?
I'm doing good, thank you. How are you guys?
All good, all good. Good. Yeah, what world are you coming? Are you coming to us from?
It's winter in the real world here.
This man is chilling at a bar.
It's pretty cozy in this little space. This is actually one of the first Uncanny Alley, which I think we'll be talking about. One of the first virtual spaces I ever built. It was quite funny. As I was setting up for this discussion, I had forgotten that the video I had here was the big live launch of the, I think it was the Quest 2. So it's quite nostalgic being back in this place. I think this was back in 2020 around then.
Okay.
Damn. So look, man, when Scott told me about the conversation we're going to have with you, I looked up a few things, and boy, your body of work, man. It's so huge, so rich. One can't help but ask the question, what makes the man? From someone who went to from developing gaming platforms at the early times at Nokia, to building worlds, to VR products in healthcare. Who is Medarik? Where do you come from? How did you grow up?
Firstly, thanks so much for having me on the show. I hope you don't find it too uncomfortable talking to my metaverse persona, but the way I like to do these kind of conversations, it also gives me kind of a chance to explain what this is, right? And quite often for some of your viewers, what I want to just start off with is, you know, I'm Medarik, I'm, you know, Rick Truik in the real world. Everything you're seeing here, I'm basically sitting in my chair in Cape Town in South Africa. I'm wearing a VR headset. I've got two controllers. So everything you're seeing is basically me talking to you. You know, I've got these human kind of expressions. Also, I've got a camera in the world here that I can kind of, you know, think of it like a pocket camera. So I can just grab this camera and, you know, show you guys around. So I like to kind of talk from these spaces because it really helps people understand, you know, when you talk about this kind of stuff, what we mean. Out the way, I am originally from the great metropolis of Kokstad, South Africa. Grew up on the farm, never really touched computers until, you know, I think at school I kind of played my cousin's computer once or twice, but only really when I was, you know, just left school, I kind of got my hands on a computer. And I think because it was so alien to me, I just absolutely adopted it. I think I've always been a character designer, you know, since I can remember. I was always drawing little monsters and kind of weird things. And I think it's this kind of eternal quest of how close can I bring my characters to coming to life. And VR and kind of, you know, where a lot of my journeys and a lot of my kind of experiments with technology, VR for me is one of the most human. It's one of the most kind of, you know, everyone talks about, you know, social media being this like big divide, and it almost feels like this is what social media should have been, you know, where it's actually real people, real human intimacy. You know, it's the same like the real world. When you're talking to someone too close, you kind of like have to back off a bit, you know, so that brings a bunch of human stuff. But yeah, Medarik from Cape Town, currently living in Komiki.
So cool. I think that part of the context is we wanted to sort of rush ahead and get this interview this week is because in the context of the Raindance Immersive Awards coming up this weekend, which I know you're in competition with your world Uncanny Alley, which you're in partnership with, you're doing a live show with the Ferryman Collective. Maybe just quickly, just give us a bit of context with that. But I mean, technically, I don't want to get too deep into that because our audience won't really know too much about the Raindance Immersive, but I do want to use that as kind of a platform looking at the bigger space that is live events or the bigger spaces that are VR chat and so forth.
Yeah, absolutely. So currently, as I mentioned earlier, I'm in Uncanny Alley, which is kind of this lore and universe I've been building up over the years. Everything you see, I kind of sculpt and create myself. I use VR sculpting tools, so you know I can literally create an avatar, step inside it. So Uncanny Alley was always this kind of personal sandbox where I'm playing this kind of journey on character ideas and things like that. And basically that, you know, opened the gates to what's actually happening behind the scenes. You know, if you come into these platforms and you kind of peek behind the curtain, you know, a lot of film festivals, most film festivals nowadays, accept immersive media as a category within the competitions. So currently we're in the middle of Raindance. We're heading towards the end. This is the last weekend. And Raindance Film Festival is a massive film festival that supports everything immersive media. The big difference here is with Raindance, there's a lot of people like myself that we don't meet in the real world. There is a physical event, but Raindance predominantly happens in these platforms, in this case, VR chat. And basically, you know, you'll go to a show, everyone will come together and watch the show. So over the years, I've been developing Uncanny Alley. We can go into more details about those if you want. But this year at Raindance, basically, we collaborated with the Ferryman Collective. You know, I'd built quite a few worlds in the past and they'd gone to film festivals and they kind of, after a while, I would want to kind of start building the new thing. So during the I think it was the 22 Raindance, I had a previous Uncanny Alley on and the Ferryman Collective were part of the tour. And these tours you can do, you know, other people come, I show them around the world, they'll come follow me. And afterwards, they approached and asked if I was interested. And funny enough, I had seen one of their shows earlier, and I was very interested what would happen if you got live actors performing. So essentially what happens in Uncanny Alley and New Day, which is the one in competition now at Raindance, is we have two actors, and those two actors play about, I think, six or seven characters each. And then you have an audience of about six or seven, and this is all live. Think of it as live theater. And then the whole production, you basically, you know, it's a story about breaking out of prison, fighting the corporation that's trying to wipe your memory, and you're all prisoners that bust out of prison. But it's actually all live happening with actors, and you as the audience actually participate and run around and follow these actors. So it's really kind of the fringe and the, let's say, a peak of the future of what kind of media could become. It is still quite niche. You know, I think the people that are in it have managed to cross that curtain, but it's nothing like the hype cycle of, you know, the metaverse back then where, you know, everyone was like, oh, this is, but I think everyone in the space sees that future and it's right here. But it is still quite technical for your general, you know, audience to engage.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So yeah, well, I'm new to the concepts of VR, right? Scott introduced me to this. So to me, this world of VR has always been quite technical. However, you do a great job of moving it away from technical to creating a much broader storytelling aspect of it. And when you look at Uncanny Alley, it's more than just a VR environment. You see live performance, you see a lot of storytelling, theater experience, all of this hosted in VR chat, yes. To me, it almost sounds part art, part activism as well. I wonder what inspired this project for you.
That's a great question, and I think, you know, Uncanny Alley, also my journey through VR, virtual reality, and kind of how, you can look at a lot of my worlds almost as a diary of the current state of the so-called metaverse. And what really kind of inspired a lot of the storytelling, especially, you know, the later versions, was kind of a lot of real world scenarios that were happening. You'll notice my name on screen is Metaric. I've been very, very inspired my whole life by the book Ready Player One, you know, and this and the book Snow Crash, which this is where the term metaverse came from. So, you know, being a sci-fi nerd, I called myself Metaverse Rick. And then Facebook came along, bought Oculus, which is quite funny because they're talking about that right now here. And kind of like the shift in power of, you know, who's trying to rule these spaces, who's trying to own these spaces. A lot of kind of deeper stories about, you know, open source technology and, you know, if I do call the self my home, is it really my home if someone else owns it and they can kind of turn it off? So Uncanny Alley is a much bigger picture also about kind of a personal journey of where is this open metaverse? How do we find these places like this, but something that you can own entirely in your own open source that, you know, you own the switch. The problem with all of these spaces, as magical as they are, ultimately corporations do own them, and a one button could, you know, end the civilization in the specific metaverse in a sense. So, you know, just the rich history of that also kind of ties into a lot of the lore, and it's a bit more of a dystopian take, you know, because I think a lot of it can be quite dystopian if ruled by kind of one master. So the more kind of open things become, the better for, you know, the universe in a sense.
Down with the corporations, except for the ones that sponsor the show.
Yeah. Only those ones that sponsor the show, and which are in your world as well. Those ones are.
So maybe just the recent history of your involvement in the VR space. Although these days I prefer to use the immersive term. So I remember we started talking about things. I was quite fascinated by 360 cameras. This must have been 2017, 2018 or so. I came to bug you a little bit. You were here in Joburg, and I used to come speak to you about it. And I think I remember, if I'm not mistaken, it would have been around September, October 2020 when I first attended one of the first meetups. I think it was in AltSpace at the time. The question around that is maybe just give us some context around the sense of community that's built up around these spaces, but also more specifically, why South Africa seems to be so involved in this sort of space. We seem to be, I could be wrong, but from my perspective, or at least from my bubble, South Africans are almost disproportionately represented within this space. And I think even with Raindance this weekend, there's at least three South Africans and one extended from the continent, Nigerian guy, in competition for this weekend as well. So maybe you just have some comments on that.
Yeah, so I think, you know, our South African community it's still quite small, you know, in the essence. It hasn't really grown really big in the real world, if you can say that. But it's an extremely tight community, and I think the level of skills here we have in South Africa is off the charts. And I think it took almost something like, you know, what happened during the pandemic is any kind of game developer-y type person, technologist, artist, started looking, you know, in South Africa, we had such a hard lockdown during those 3 months that, you know, none of us could be social. So for me as a kind of techie, I'm like, okay, how do I find these other connections? And ended up building basically this place, and built a club downstairs, which we called Club Paradise, threw a party, invited a bunch of our mates. And I think so many of us were like, what on earth just happened? There were literally avatars kind of passed out the next morning. The club was still open. There was bottle beers everywhere. And, you know, you're still at home having a, well, if you had any alcohol, you're still having a beer, you know, you're like, and you all, but you all socially feel that human intimacy again. And that for me was so, so kind of powerful in the context of, you know, wow, this can be a community. So I think what happened there is we started the MVC SA, which is like Metaverse Crew South Africa. And it was basically a little WhatsApp group, super, super kind of, you know, low key, just a bunch of people that do weird stuff because we like to, you know, it's like cannibals, it's just curiosity, you know. And slowly that group started, you know, I was like pushing it a lot, like every kind of, because I've been making games so long, I have quite a few people I know from the past, and I'm like, just come, you know, come check it out, especially during COVID. And what ended up happening is we started as a South African crew, started getting together, having little meetups, having little workshops, doing a lot of parties, hanging out. And that started kind of attracting a lot of other adults in the kind of space. And I think as we started going, there wasn't any expectations. We were just so excited about it and kind of that maker movement mentality of like, wow, this is cool. Here's a shared economy. What do you want to know? Come join us type of thing. And that, I think, had this kind of gravitas of just starting to attract people that have seen the future, you know. And I think also just being a little bit, we have a WhatsApp group, but a little bit controlled into, you know, back then every single LinkedIn person was trying to join, and we're a little bit like, you know, you kind of have to be in it to be, you know, a part of it. So that group is quite full of, I'd say, people that have really believed in this creative platform, really, not, you know, not for just the business, but they've kind of seen the future, and they're like, this is it. It might not be now, it might not be in 2 years, but, you know, this is really it. And yeah, I guess these type of conversations are really needed, because the problem of it is the first time you come into these platforms where you don't control on your own, it's pretty chaotic, you know, like someone's going to be like, oh, I'm going to download VR chat. They're going to jump in. They're going to be like, what the F is actually going on here, you know? Because also it's that big, you know, like I'm here. Our community is all filmmakers, game developers, creators, storytellers. But in VR chat, it's predominantly hundreds of other communities, you know, just rave scenes and club scenes, and there's a deaf community, there's every single kind of community you could possibly find exists in these type of platforms. So you're seeing just almost a niche of that within our world on these platforms.
So building this kind of technologies in an economy like South Africa, I would not imagine it's any easier. I mean, the problem is not even unique to the VR community. It's almost like a tech problem across the country, across the continent. But in this space in particular, where do you see the problem lying? Is it a funding-related problem? Is it a policy-related problem? Or is it a lack of customer awareness type of problem?
I think currently for VR specifically, there's two things. There's, you know, when Meta kind of took over, they decided to go the mobile route. And when I say the mobile route, it's a small headset you put on and that's it. There's no other brain driving it. Whereas Oculus, and I think a lot of the early adopters of VR, your headset is actually attached to a monster PC. So a lot of us, when we got into it, you see the future. When you put on those small headsets back in the day and you see the same thing, it just doesn't quite take you to that same level. But in order to really see the big deal, you have to be a bit technical. It doesn't matter where you're from, you know. You got to be curious enough to not throw the toys out the room because things aren't working, you know. You have to be like, oh, why is my voice not working? Oh, this. So I think the adoptability of virtual reality needs to happen, obviously, first, you know, and I think secondly, in this continent, you know, and a lot of, you know, the West, if you want to say that, is the culture of avatars, right? So we aren't used to seeing avatars like this, you know. We aren't used to seeing characters on things that aren't kid related. Whereas, you know, in other countries and other, you know, Japan, for example, avatars are very much adopted into seriousness of humanity. So spaces like this in Japan are absolutely cooking because, you know, your big brands, your big corporations accept the culture of avatars being a serious thing. And that, for me, is actually the biggest shift. You know, imagine taking one of our CEOs and saying, yeah, come chat in here, you know. I think there are those that are brave enough, but you know, there's a cultural shift that needs to happen. And
I think that's why, I think that's why Michael Balkin's Soda World got big in Japan, right? There's always like quite a lot of Japanese people that pitched up at his shows because, yeah, it was just more of a culture there. And their avatars were amazing. Their general viewpoint and culture and what they were bringing to the event was amazing. So, yeah, it says a lot to your point, which you just mentioned. Just as a follow-up there, Rick, so I remember it was 2022 or so, there was huge investments going on, and the, you know, the term metaverse became almost like a household thing, and that's when Facebook decided to change the name to Meta as well. And then at the end of 2022, there was almost this big crash, right? This interest in the metaverse and its investment thereof kind of went away almost overnight. And I'm starting to feel that that's kind of coming back a little bit. Do you feel the same way, or what are your views in terms of, you know, investment going forward?
Look, I think firstly, every marketing person loves hyping shit up, right? sorry, I didn't mean to swear, but every marketing person, you know, talk about anyone in the space I'm in. Years ago, they did this mixed reality thing of a whale jumping out a basketball court and crashing into the basketball court. And that was the marketing. But the reality is, like, man, it's nothing like that. So it's like every single techie like me is like, what the hell? Now everyone's going to expect this absolutely magical device, right? And it's just not true. It's like, so I think the hype cycle, what happened is like, yes, it does exist. Like, it looked, you know, this is when the hype cycle happened. This is how it looks. The problem is corporations trying to explain how it works. And it's like, you know, all these LinkedIn people jumping on the bandwagon. All of us as actual metaverse people, we're like, man, these guys are all jumping in way too early. You know, we as techies are still having like technical issues. And now everyone's saying the metaverse is here. We're like, this is cool. You know, it's getting a lot of interest, but I think a lot of the realists were like, you know, this is completely a hype cycle. But again, like I say, I think everyone that's felt it and that feels it, it is coming. So it really, you know, it's not like a maybe for me. I banked a lot on VR and it certainly has moved a lot slower than I've expected. But still, when the convenience of the mobile headsets gets to the quality of PC driven worlds, then we're going to see a much bigger adoption.
Yeah. So, I mean, in South Africa, right, you tend to see this battle between creative vision and versus the funding logic, which ultimately are the bottlenecks of creativity and innovation in our country, perhaps the continent at large. How are we going to balance this in the VR space? Are we going to see investors, funders who have the appetite to be led by the creativity, or do you anticipate that this is still going to be quite a journey where funders and investors have to learn what this space is really about?
I think it's not really specifically related to virtual reality or gaming or VFX right now. I think we are kind of on the precipice of utter chaos. I think everyone's kind of I don't think there's a sense of what's happening in VR with investment right now, because I think what's happening on a global creative level with AI tools and, you know, things like this, whole different discussion, but it is creating kind of one-man army studios now. So I think what we're going to start seeing is a lot more indie, real kind of cool, different titles starting to come out that aren't going to require these absolute mega budgets, that will enable people to create prototypes themselves. Because if you're not a game designer, if you haven't, you know, I've been doing it more than a decade, but if you're trying to get a prototype made, that's kind of your biggest hurdle right now. Because if you've got an idea, you just previously couldn't do it. If you've got an idea now and you've actually really got, you know, the curiosity, you can get quite far in these kind of stories. So my point being, I think there's an absolute massive shift in what we've seen in the AAA space, in the traditional film space, and the traditional VR space, where it was like, oh, there's all the investors, here's all the artists. Now, also the beauty about these spaces, you're talking to a banana. You have no idea if that's an investor or a creative. So you're actually having these connections now, and talking about our continent, it's giving you opportunity to speak to these potential investors, potential fundraisers outside of Africa that are very interested in what's happening in Africa, you know? So events like Raindance is an example. It's directors from all over the world. And it's not just people in VR chat. Like, you know, it's the biggest games in VR. The same people are hanging out here. So I think, you know, the biggest issue is still accessibility. The biggest issue is still data in this country, and it has been forever, the cost of data. Literally the biggest sign downstairs is data must fall, you know, slightly different, but still the cost of data in this country, it's a killer. And, you know, for people to learn, especially here, like, you've got to give them free tools to learn. If you've got YouTube and you've got Unity, that's all you need, and a curious mind, obviously. And then funding will come, you know, because also with all this AI, people are seeing just pitch deck after pitch deck after AI that they don't believe people anymore. They want to see prototypes and know you've got the chops, or, you know.
Well, as an extension on that, in terms of funding, I thought maybe, I know you're not necessarily a representative, but I thought maybe you could speak to opportunities for local creators in the space that are either doing artworks or theater spaces or building worlds. Electric Cells is the most obvious one that pops up for me that's very active in the space. Maybe you could talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. So Electric South, without a doubt, have done the most for the African immersive space ever. They've been there from day one, you know, trying to run these labs where you had to try use these phones, and, you know, VR back then was super clunky. They've kind of been pushing every year, and, you know, they have a whole bunch of various labs, and those labs are, I would say, you know, hands down the best labs we've kind of attended. You know, New Dimensions Lab, where they basically get mentors from around the world that are very, very specialized in the space. They choose 10 artists or so from around the world, put you in a place that, you know, is in the middle of nowhere, essentially, because kind of keeps everyone together, socializing together. And artists all arrive, you know, and it's all kind of selected. You don't have to have any skill in these previous technologies, but you have to be a creative with a good kind of concept. You come in and basically you pitch on the first day, and then it's 7 days of, here we go, let's show you what's out there. And not just talk, it's like, here's a 360 camera, here's a VR headset, here's VR chat. Actually get them past the like, that looks cool, to the actual like, ha, this is how I could use this. And then during that process, they rework their pitches now with an actual understanding of how technology works. And then they pitch again right on the last day. And, you know, this last lab, two of those projects actually then got funding to build it out to a prototype stage, which is fantastic. But the the bigger part of it is the networking, because networking is fundamental. You know, if you're not talking to people, it's very hard to find those funders. If you cold calling people on LinkedIn, it's very hard to find those funders. If you want to find funding in this space, pick up a headset, download VR Chat, and come hang out and start talking to people, because it's not local anymore. You know, we are just as close as everyone else if we have the access to the tech and to the data costs.
Yeah. So sweat equity is very important in this space.
100%.
One of your projects, I think it's Eden Labs, not just the lab, but the idea. Just trying to understand what was the dream behind Eden Labs?
So it's been a very long journey with kind of, you know, virtual reality and new technology. So we initially started Eden Labs. You know, myself, Derek White, co-founded, and Gary Steele, we were the first kind of three. And we were like, man, this tech is so cool. Let's see what we can do with the art world. You know, let's experiment and let's just dive into it. Can we get the South African audience to kind of buy into this concept of immersive media? So that was a really long journey of, you know, creating absolutely incredible projects. We started a gallery called Tomorrow Gallery, which was in the Keys Art Mile. And we basically put on shows and collaborated with artists using these new technologies to kind of show it off. And it was incredible. I mean, from the Invisible Exhibition to working with Mary Sabanda to Wayne Barker to, you know, Lady Scully, like working again, you know, just what would an artist bring with this kind of tech? Amazing. When we came to try and sell the art, another story, right? And this is the constant, I would say, biggest issue of virtual reality. And it ain't no joke. Selling VR is hard. Making a business out of VR is hard. Making a creative project in VR is hard. So, you know, a lot of these kind of things. So Eden Labs, we were like, okay, besides doing that, we also had these Friday sessions where we would invite artists in that had never used the tech before. And for a whole day, our kind of team was dedicated to them to just do something crazy. And that was amazing for us because, as you know, artists keep you on your toes. Every artist is different. They ask different questions. So we were, you know, from augmented reality to motion capture to VR sculpting to 3D printing. They kept us on their toes and they asked us interesting questions. That was super cool. So that was a really, really fun series. Then, you know, we developed the Eden Snacker, which was basically for public-facing VR. And that's when kind of COVID came and really changed everything, right? Then we moved the company away from public-facing galleries and all of that, which was very successful, but monetizing was very difficult. And we started working a lot. You know, we created Made by Eden. And that was then focused on creating healthcare for children. You know, can we use VR to help kids going through an MRI, you know, treatment, like pre-prep them for these experiences? And, you know, we've been looking a lot at kind of those spaces in the hospitals and not just that, but creating 360 videos about, you know, talking about hard issues and working with doctors and nurses. And again, I think, you know, that technology adoption just still isn't quite there yet for those, you know, mega adoptions to happen. But still, the hospitals that are using them, you know, we've got a bunch in Reach for a Dream at the moment. They love it. You know, you pick up the handle, very easy to use, put it down again. And so we're working a lot in that kind of space. And then Metaric, this kind of, you know, that's my living in the fringe, the after hours kind of Batman mask on, you know, deep exploration of the tech kind of thing.
Yeah. So working with artists like Mary Sibande and William Kendrich, I'd imagine translating some of that work, some of the artist work into a digital space without losing the essence wouldn't have been something very easy to do. How was that experience for you?
It It was amazing because it actually with those projects, it was the other way around. So we were keeping everything super, super real and super, you know, it was Mary's show. You walk in, you're like, oh, this is a Mary show. But we snuck technology in there to make it also not feel like technology. So at Mary's show, mm-hmm. for example, you know, she does these beautiful installations. We actually 3D scan Mary's face. I 3D printed this big mask. I hid all the technology inside that, and then we hung those from the roof. So you don't see, you're not like, oh, this is a VR headset. You just see this, you know, thing, this face of Mary's. You pick it up, you put it to your face, and then you're seeing Mary's real world coming alive digitally. So it was kind of those type of layers. And, you know, the space was quite big. I think we had like 48 different speakers around the space. So even without VR, you have this constant shifting immersive, and the front window as well. I built a little kind of a motion capture thing, so it would only lock onto one person. So if a crowd walked past the gallery, then the whole screen would actually change to their perspective. And if they came up to the window, Mary's dogs would come out and start growling. So, you know, really experimenting with, like, how can we use these techs in their traditional practice, you know? Other project with Lady Scully was really fun, and Wayne Barker, where, you know, it was challenging, like, old artists versus new artists and this whole concept of voyeurism. So Lady Scully drew this beautiful sculpture in VR, and then we had a VR headset hanging that any audience member could choose where they're looking. But then we had a secret box full of keyholes that if you peep through, you would see what the person in the headset's looking at, you know, playing on these kind of ideas. So, and again, building the headsets, you know, I love 3D printing. I'm a 3D printing nut. So the headsets themselves weren't an Oculus headset. It was like for Wayne Barker's show, it was all those old school Viewmasters, you know. So when you pick it up, you're like, what is this thing? But you know it's got a handle on it, so you hold it to your face, and then the show kind of starts. And
so what year are we referring? When was those shows? That must have been 2017-ish or so. What year are you referring to there? That was a while ago.
Yeah, near numbers, but you're around 2017.
Yeah.
Ask Merrick about worlds, not numbers.
So I've got a follow-up question to that. So where would you see those these days? And I'm asking this because I'm a bit of a stickler for archive. Like I like archive. I like being able to like preserve old worlds and old shows, even if they're, you know, even if they're a little bit glitchy and not really, you know, updated as such. I still want to have a space where I can access them in some way, or sort of see some sort of historical thread to sort of where to now, you know. And that's rare. And I would really like to be able to see, you know, these kind of shows or these experiences being preserved, even if it's just in a, you know, I know it's difficult. It depends on the platform, depends how you build it, depends where it is. But I don't know. Do you have some views on that? I mean, I it's kind of like the example I always use is that app Within that's no longer around, that used to have collections of different experiences from different producers and different companies, all available within that one space. And that's actually, I use that as a really useful almost a highway to just experience all kinds of stuff that was out there. And that's the kind of that I wouldn't have found otherwise, because I didn't know what to search for. I didn't know who the producers to search for, things like that. What are your views there?
Sure. I think
save everything on a hard drive for the best.
Yeah. It's a loaded question, you know, cause yeah, we have YouTube.
Sorry,
I think the connection there jumped a bit. So archival, I think it's a tricky one, right? It's in this kind of landscape, you know, coming back to this world, I haven't been in this room for a while besides, you know, a quick tour of Raindance the other day I did. But being here, like this nostalgia I'm feeling, literally when Meta bought Oculus is playing in the background, I can go and grab, you know, my first, does it still work? Yeah. Like my first avatar I ever made, you know, like literally check the face pops on for a second.
Hey, man. There you go.
So archival here is, it feels on a note, this is crazy, but this is archived again in VR chat. And this world in particular, you know, it got to a point where everything broke because of a big software update. So this world exists now, but it's frozen in time. You know, my dog on the couch here is here forever. You know, it's like the strange memory bank. But I think there's really something about, you know, what does the open platform of something like this look like, where it is about archiving these experiences in a sense? Because, you know, the problem is the technology changes, you know, especially with like our earlier projects, like the Lost Botanist, for example. Very hard to just adapt that now to the new tech unless you're constantly working on that project. So example, like the Lost Botanist, you know, absolutely beautiful show. We traveled a bit. It was showed at Comic-Con locally, which was just amazing to be able to show some stuff locally. But very hard to just bring that project back because Unity that it's built in has done so many kind of updates, especially in the VR space, you know, because back then the VR plugins and tools are very, very different to where they are now. So very hard to archive, very hard to re-watch those kind of older shows, but that has changed a fair bit now because VR Unity tools have upgraded a lot.
So here's a question, but in reference to the Lost Botanist, so for example, I hear what you're saying, but why can I not find it in the Oculus store or something like that? Why can't I, like, is that because of what you're saying? Like, it's just not possible to have it there? Or what would it take for you to make that consistent or findable?
So the Lost Botanist, for example, if it was, you know, we built that essentially as a, can we build something and find funding international for this thing? So essentially it wasn't a 100% completed game. So we were never publishing it to the Oculus store. So without raising the particular funds we were after for that project, essentially you don't keep up with the tech stack as it goes, right? If the Lost Botanist was like, cool, we got the funding we needed, then when those updates happen, you keep on that kind of level of updates. So, you know, as new technologies come out and like Quest 2 comes out, cool, here's a new kind of release. So, but also that was a very kind of point in time where, you know, it was very, very technical and niche. You know, we were doing real time kind of, the Lost Botanist was real time on an Oculus Go, which was essentially just a video player, you know? So it was really, we kind of knew what we were cobbling together, you know, versus what the tech was actually offering us. So, but if you know, you can totally build things up, you know, if you're building a game, you know, you just, everything is stored there and is updatable and is getting easier. But the shows and stuff harder, you know, as technology, VR chat might release an update that breaks something in the world. So that means you'd have to go back into Unity and back into this. But you might be cases like this world where the actual Unity files are completely corrupted. So it's very much lost in its own archive by mistake.
Okay. So I have a background in web development, app development, UX, UI design. Whenever I am introduced to a new technology, I can't help but think of a problem to solve with it. So I'm now thinking of building a world, and I'm wondering what it would take to build the world that I'm thinking. So I want to build a world that for autistic kids, right, to simulate a lot of scenarios for them. One thing that autistic kids thrive off of is modeling. If the kid is going to see a doctor, you want to model what that would look like. And I can't find a better way to do that than within a world. I can imagine creating a world within which you are modeling the experience of what the kid is going to come across when they get to the doctor. They are in this world, they're interacting with the doctor, but because it's animated in the sense, it's not that threatening. When they meet a doctor in life and they're holding a syringe, the kid immediately panics and a lot of things goes wrong from there. So I'm thinking of building a world which models a lot of scenarios for autistic kids. What would that take? What do I need to know, and where do I start?
So I'd say predominantly the bigger things like you're seeing now, the think of them as the big applications, you know, is game engine based. So kind of the two big things are Unity and Unreal Engine. Unity being a little bit more flexible on platforms, Unreal being very easy to make things look really good, really quick, but might not be as adaptive as Unity. So fundamentally, you need a studio that can build this kind of stuff for you. Or what's happening, like you're seeing with Raindance and these film festivals, there's existing platforms out there that make things a lot easier, right? An example of that is me trying to program how this avatar works is a big, big, big undertaking. And that is why VRChat is a big, big company, right? Is because getting the networking, the servers, all of that is a multi-million kind of dollar expense. So to carry on from that, you know, what's required to kind of build these spaces, there's two approaches. The one is where we are, these kind of VR chat worlds, these big social platforms that already exist, because a lot of the programming of the deep tech stuff has already been done. And that is very, very difficult to do from scratch. You know, that's multi-millions of dollars building kind of, you know, these kind of systems that enable you to do everything that VR chat does. So the one way is to kind of work through a platform like VR chat, where a lot of films and things are currently doing it, because it makes it a lot easier. You still need a Unity developer, but you basically need a world builder, you know, someone that understands Unity enough that and understands VR chat that can put these things together. There is a big rise of what's happening with the web. You know, the web is kind of, and when I, let me just turn my focus off here so it stops blurring. So the other route is the web. And like I say, following this dream of the open metaverse, easy accessibility, the web is going to become that in the future. And I think, you know, you still have avatars, you still have VR. It might not be as dense and as rich as this right now, but platforms out there, you know, like Hyperfire, things like this, let us start creating these spaces that we own and kind of drag and drop, you know, drag a model, drop it on your web page, and there it is. And you can actually start, you know, piecing together things and learning, you know, a lot easier way to program than learning Unity. Unity is incredible to know, but it's an absolute monster to learn. But, you know, we used to run a lot of these MVC workshops, training people how to do these things. And the reality is, you know, if you dedicate it enough and you're not put off by how big the program is, look at something small and be like, I want to make an avatar. And, you know, that's a micro fraction of what you can do in Unity. But when you're watching a YouTube around building avatars, you're only looking at a small part, and that is a lot less overwhelming than trying to learn Unity, if that makes sense. But essentially, to build spaces like this right now, you need world builders, technologists that, you know, understand Unity, or engines like Unreal Engine. Those are kind of the two main ones, Unity and Unreal Engine. All of this here is built in Unity.
Nice. And how long am I looking at? And if I was to cover a budget, what am I looking at?
Cool. That's always the hardest, longest kind of piece of string, you know. I think because a lot of people, you know, a lot of our community, we're doing it for the love of it and for, you know, really the passion and helping our projects and stuff. But also the reality, a lot of our community ended up getting super burnt out because, you know, building projects like this, like I say, there's updates in the future. So it's kind of like you said you were into web design, you know, you don't design a website and then it's up. At some point, the client's like, hey, something's not working. So it does make it quite difficult to kind of continue that thing. So how we were building it doesn't relate at all to the actual costs required, you know. If you really wanted to do it seriously and you really want a top dev, you know, there's only about, you know, there's not that many in South Africa, first of all. If you find them, they're probably into their own shit, you know, or working on with a big game studio. So you kind of really have to, you know, I often say to people that believe in this and want to do something, but they're not developers, find a technical co-founder if this is what you want to do. Because without a technical co-founder, you're always going to be under this kind of thumb of technical challenges. And unfortunately, that's, you know, that's always the case. But not to put people off, it's very easy to come into VR chat, start networking, start hanging out with people. If that is a person, if you're a web designer and you understand web tools, open Unity, your adaption rate is going to be, you know, 1,000 times quicker than, you know, someone that has no computer experience at all trying to learn Unity. But sculpting in virtual reality, like our Friday sessions, that really proves you don't need to be technical at all to create artworks in the digital anymore. But that's virtual reality and just object sculpting, if that makes sense.
Yeah, man. I think we've taken you over time, but Metaric, I really appreciate you coming to see us in there and here.
Absolutely, we'll get you guys in here for a next round, because it's wild. And like I say, you know, these, like Scott, you've obviously been to a lot of these festivals. This weekend's kind of, you know, wrapping up a lot of the things. We're doing a fun little after party event. You know, it's really projects of passion. But the passion you see here is absolutely next level. It's not VR chat. It's a Unity multiplayer playground. You know, it's a live playground. People always ask me, oh, but what can you do in there? It's like, it's virtual reality. What can you do in reality, buddy? Ooh, I make shoes. Cool, come make shoes here, you know? So, lovely to be here.
Yeah, if people want to follow your work and some of the projects you're involved in, how do they get hold of you?
So, you know, I'm a bit of a Gen X-y. I try hard on social, where I know I'm terrible at it. But on Twitter, Metaverse Rick is kind of my handle. And that's generally where I might not post so much, but that's where I hang around. And on Discord, you know, if you're interested in building, if you're interested in actually like how you make these things, and you're ready, you know, maybe someone out there in the audience is like, man, this is what I want to do, come hang out in the Hyperfire Discord. That's, you know, a lot of us kind of believers of, you know, what is the next iteration of this? What are we building next? You know, a lot of world builders and stuff do hang out in those platforms. But Metaverse Rick and... Yeah, on X.
One last one. I know Scott's going to kill me for this one. But I just thought of this as you spoke of social media. And when we started, I was thinking about where would VR and building worlds not fall into the same trap as social media, in the sense, creating worlds that are too comfortable than the real one. As much as social media has created this need for instant gratification, can the world fall into the same trap as social media, or do you find that the reality that they create is real enough?
I think it's very different, because in social media, you are judged as the person you are, right? You are judged on your photo, who you are. Who are you as Rick? I'm not Rick, I'm Meta Rick. I'm into robots and this is my world, right? Mm-hmm. And that is a big difference, because the commentary on this isn't a commentary on me per se. It's a commentary on Uncanny Alley. It's a commentary on this weird freaking sculpture I'm using, you know? Mm-hmm. But another side is it really what I joked about earlier of this, like, you know, you meet a banana and that banana could be one of the biggest investors you've ever met. You know, there's these certain things that are happening that you realize, like, you know, yes, it's all very strange and you know, maybe taking away from this and that, but what it's also doing is connecting you to people that you would never ever connect with before. You're completely connecting on a brain level, on, you know, you have no prejudgments, you know, nothing. Like, even though you still do, I look kind of scary, right? So you might be like, ooh, that's, but again, it's not like, you know, if someone looks at me and is like, oh, you're an ugly robot, I'm like, cool, you know, whatever. You know, if I was my real human and they're like, hey, you're an ugly human, I'm probably going to cry, you know? It's like, so I think there is a big difference. And don't forget, when you're hanging out here, everyone you're hanging out with are real people, and you have that human intimacy, and that's what makes it human. It's not a keyboard warrior where you misinterpret the expression and the emotion currently are. Here, you're like, ooh, that guy's in a bad mood, and we run away, you know?
No, I like how that reality is as real as it seems. All right, thank you so much for your time, man. It's been really insightful. I thoroughly enjoyed this episode.
This episode will come out after the weekend's Raindance Immersive Awards. However, looking forward to that. Good luck with your nomination, and
great luck, man. Good luck.
Thank you very much.
Metaric from farm to tech world to building worlds. We'll leave all the links in the description below. Thank you so much, man. It's been a pleasure.
See you, man.
Excellent, guys. Thanks so much for having me. And until next time.
In your world, we'll come through.
Ciao. Yeah.